Hi, I'm Jessica Steinberg.
And I'm Amanda Borchel-Dunn. Welcome to the Times of Israel's Daily Briefing.
Your update on what's important in Israel, the Middle East,
and the Jewish world. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Daily Briefing. Today is Sunday, May 15th. I'm Amanda Borchel-Dunn, here with editor David Horowitz, military correspondent Emmanuel Fabian. Hello to you both.
Amanda.
Good morning, Amanda.
Today is Nakba Day. We will discuss the continuing furor following the accidental death of Al Jazeera reporter Shirin Abu Akleh and the status of the probe into the shooting. We will hear about two fallen military personnel, police commando Noam Raz and a secret ops agent, until now known as Mem. To begin with, David, you were in Jerusalem's Old City on Friday and witnessed to part of the funeral procession for journalist Shirin Abu Akleh. What prompted you to go and what did you see there?
Well, you know, the funeral was taking place in the Old City, and I wanted to see how it would play out. We knew it was coming into the Christian Quarter. It wasn't completely clear to me the route, but it was a blazing hot afternoon. I wrote about this. I wrote sort of about the scene and the surreality of the Old City, where you can have this incredibly fraught procession for somebody who was killed in hotly disputed circumstances, who, because she's a Christian Palestinian, it's also interesting where the, you know, that particular quarter of the Old City had this personal connection to her. But of course, the wider resonance of her being killed, and the people who were there early, they were like sort of older clergy people were there very early. The cafes were closing down. It was all very reverential, lots of people wearing black. And what the stage of the funeral that I saw was certainly the less violent, but you got a sense of the tension. Unbeknown to us, where near Jaffa Gate, the confrontation between the cops and the pallbearers and others who were carrying the casket at a hospital not very far away, that had already unfolded, and we've all seen the scenes there, the unconscionable scenes there. What I saw was the belated arrival of the coffin, lots of chanting in support of Palestine, and minimal of confrontation. We saw undercover cops pulling people out of the crowd. We saw uniformed cops pulling people out of the crowd, maybe half a dozen arrests like that. We saw cops chasing after people holding Palestinian flags, all of which at a much lower level of force and friction than it turned out had played out at the hospital just a few minutes earlier.
Just as her death is a war of narratives, which you wrote about last week in an op-ed, this funeral itself has been a war of narratives, and the reasoning behind the police's interference itself. We're hearing conflicting reports. Can you briefly tell us what they are?
Yeah, I mean, it's incredibly troubling, obviously. This is a terrible incident. A journalist was killed in the course of her work in circumstances where I hope the truth will come out and many, many people won't be listening. In the Palestinian Authority and in much of the Arab world, I think there is no interest whatsoever in understanding what may have happened, in getting to the bottom of what had happened, if it's anything other than problematic for Israel. The Palestinian Authority has accused Israel of executing her. Mahmoud Abbas actually, said that. Obviously, Israel did not execute her. It is possible that she was killed by errant Israeli fire. It is possible that she was killed by some of the indiscriminate Palestinian gunfire in this incident in Jenin, as far as we're told. And as far as we're told, the Israeli investigation has not been able to determine which of those two particular scenarios was the case. They say if they had the bullet, they'd be able to tell. There was a report, I don't know if it was confirmed, that soldiers who were involved in that operation had been told to give in their guns to be checked, because you can apparently determine by the barrel which gun a bullet has come from, but the Palestinian Authority is not handing over the bullet. So that the death and the circumstances of it are fraught and complicated enough. And then you come to the funeral. Now, what's striking there, and again, this is partial information and we don't know everything, is the police insisted in a formal statement that a mob had seized the casket and against the family's wishes at the hospital and refused to let it be transported in a hearse for that stage of the procession, as had been agreed with the family. And that the police were attacked in some degree or another. But the police actually explicitly stated in a statement that a mob had seized the body against the family's wishes. And her brother said that that was not the case, that they had wanted to have a small procession at the hospital, and they were basically bombarded by police when they emerged with the body. So there's no, it's hard to see how those two versions can be reconciled. And we have heard people in the police saying things like, you know, of course, this just should have been allowed to proceed, even if some stones were thrown and even if Palestinian flags were raised, you know, somebody should have been wiser. The police have now set up an inquiry. I don't know where that's going to go, but it would seem to be, you know, a truly dismal continuation of what was already an incredibly resonant incident and a deeply damaging one, as well as a tragic one.
Manny, turning to you, there's been a lot of back and forth last week about who could and could not take part in the probe over her death. David alluded to part of the struggle. What is the actual status right now and what is being zeroed in on?
So as David mentioned, the probe is focusing on two scenarios in which Shireen Abu Akleh was killed. One involves Palestinian gunmen firing at Israeli troops, and the second involves troops firing at Palestinian gunmen. Right now, the army has conducted a kind of a reconstruction of events of troops in the area. On Friday, they went there to look at the scene and try to reconstruct that possible scenario. But the issue remains still that the bullet is being held by the Palestinian Authority. And without the bullet, Israel is saying that it cannot determine yet who fired it. Also, as David mentioned, the rifles of those involved in the operation were taken because the inside the barrel is something called rifling, and it leaves a mark on the bullet that can indicate which gun it came from. If they can examine the bullet, then they can examine the guns and then see which one it matches to, if that is the possibility. But the Palestinian Authority is currently not willing to cooperate with Israel with it. They rejected an Israeli request to work on this investigation with a US representative. And in response, the Palestinian Authority said that they were willing for international bodies to participate in this investigation, but not with Israel. That's currently where it's holding. So it's very difficult for the army to really figure it out without the bullet and without the Palestinian Authority cooperating.
David, this sounds like an incredibly insensitive question, but I wonder, does it really matter who fired the bullet? This reporter, as you know, as an editor of a major newspaper here in Israel, this reporter was in a danger zone. This is a known problem for reporters who are reporting from scenes of fighting. Why is it so significant that we hear who actually did fire the bullet?
Well, it's not clear enough to me exactly who was where, and certainly it's not clear to me, maybe it is clear to others, where exactly Shireen Abu Akleh was standing. Was she standing in a danger zone, or was she a very experienced reporter who had covered years and years of clashes, who was some distance away from the fighting? I think it does matter. In either of the two scenarios that the army is saying, it has isolated as the likely incidents where the fatal bullet was fired, there was no deliberate targeting of her. Again, I'm not sure that people are interested in knowing that, but that is the case, that it was either errant Israeli gunfire or it was a bullet from some allegedly wild gunfire by Palestinian gunmen. In a clash, we should add, because Israel at an official level doesn't seem to have internalized the need to explain this, this was escalated Israeli army activity in the Jenin area because of a surge in terrorist incidents in which many Israelis have been killed, 19 since late March. Several of the terrorists came from the Jenin area, which is a long time hotbed all the way back to the Second Intifada, when it was really the suicide bombing infrastructure capital of the Second Intifada. You know, these things do take place in a context, but in this particular incident, an experienced reporter wearing a helmet with a flak jacket marked press some distance away, as far as we can tell, from where the gunfire was exchanged, was killed. That's terrible. If journalists don't take measured risks, then the world doesn't know what's going on. And some journalists take measured risks because of a commitment to enabling people to understand what's going on. And to suggest, which I know you weren't, but which I know some people have, she was a journalist. She went to somewhere where bullets were being fired, as though the circumstances in which she then lost her life are not serious and do not need to be examined. I think that's inappropriate. And if we didn't have journalists seeking the truth and being prepared to take calculated risks, then people would not be informed about what is being done on their behalf in all kinds of circumstances, without getting into the specifics of this particular incident and so on. So I think we do need to get to the truth, and I don't think it's okay. I don't think it's conscionable to suggest, well, this was a scene of violence, and therefore, you know, the consequences are predictable and people should know better and so on. I don't think that's the case here at all.
Thank you for that. We'll go to a short break now. Hi, podcast listeners. The Times of Israel is celebrating a decade this year, and I'm happy to invite you to our kickoff TOI at 10 live event series. Join us May 24th at Jerusalem's First Station for Who by Fire, Leonard Cohen and the Yom Kippur War. Author Matti Friedman will be in conversation with TOI editor David Horowitz to discuss his new book on the Singer Priest's extraordinary tour for IDF troops in 1973. And of course, there will be live music. If you're in Israel, please join us. If you're not, we'll share a recording after the event exclusively with our TOI community members. For more information and tickets, go to timesofisrael.com/TOI10. That's timesofisrael.com/TOI10. Hope to see you there. And we're back. Counterterrorism officer Noam Raz was killed in clashes near Jenin on Friday. He was part of the Yamam unit. Manny, what can you tell us about him and his unit?
The Yamam counterterrorism unit has been operating in recent months, especially in the last couple days, in the Jenin area in response to all these terror attacks that David mentioned before, including during the events when Shirin was killed, the Al Jazeera journalist. So troops were again back in the area on Friday, and they went in to arrest one gunman, I believe. Maybe a couple more people were arrested, but there was one gunman who had shot at troops in previous days that they arrested. And as these officers were wrapping up and leaving the area, one of these bullets struck Raz, I believe, in the back, and he was taken by helicopter to a hospital in Haifa, and he later died of his wounds.
He was, of course, a father of six, 47-year-old, and considered just the best of everything we have to offer here. Now, moving on, this morning, the Israel Defense Forces released the name of an Israeli Special Forces officer that until now was known as Mem. He was killed in a botched nighttime operation in the Gaza Strip in November 2018. Manny, why is his name being released today?
So the military has been examining these cases of names of soldiers who have died from Special Forces units. And their names have not been permitted, or their photographs have not been permitted. So this was one of these cases where the army decided that, within coordination with the family, obviously, that it would be okay to publish his name. So we're talking about Lieutenant Colonel Mahmoud Khiraldin. He was from Hulfish, which is a Druze town in northern Israel, and he was in the Military Intelligence Special Operations Unit. And in November 11th, 2018, he was in the Gaza Strip with a team, you know, of other people from this unit, conducting an intelligence gathering operation. And then during this mission, they were discovered by Hamas operatives. After they were discovered and questioned, one of the members of this intelligence team opened fire at the Hamas operatives in order to escape, because they were arousing too much suspicion at that point. And during that firefight, one of the bullets fired by one of the team members hit Khiraldin, and he was killed in the incident. And it was quite a mess to attempt to get him out. There was a massive firefight going on. There were rockets being fired at the time as well. It almost took Israel and the Gaza Strip to war at the time. There was something like 500 rockets that were launched at southern Israel, and slightly towards the center of Israel at the time as well. So now, 3.5 years later, the army has decided to published his name, and he's no longer listed as Mem, which is the initial of his first name, Mahmoud. And at the same time, the army is also looking into publishing details of other soldiers who have been killed over the years, whose names or photographs aren't published. For example, Emmanuel Moreno, who was killed in Lebanon in 2006, his photograph till this day has not been allowed to be published, but the army is looking into publishing that as well sometime soon.
Okay, and increased transparency. Gentlemen, it has been a very grim episode, so I think we need to talk about the silliest, most political event of the year, and I'm talking, of course, about the Eurovision. No surprise, but Ukraine won. I called that one, and along with everyone else in the world. David, do you know who won second place?
Yeah, I know that you're asking me that question because I'm supposed to care because it was the United Kingdom's entry. So yes, I'm fully up to speed on the Eurovision Song Contest, which I suspect for people listening to this in America is not going to be something that they're particularly familiar with. It's not limited to European nations. It is a song contest. It is of dubious merit, but of intense fascination. Israel's very invested in it because we win it intermittently. And as you were right to predict, the sort of continental sympathies were such that when it came to the public voting, I think last night, the Ukraine entry was elevated above all others. Certainly, I'm sure it was a very worthy musical venture, but plainly this was, you know, political solidarity.
To be fair, the song was quite good.
And it had national instruments and they had great costumes. It was very entertaining. Though I have to say that I really was rooting for Norway. I have to say that. It was such a cute song. Thank you, both of you, for joining me today, and have a good rest of your day.
Take care, Amanda.
Bye, Amanda.
Thanks for listening to the Times of Israel's Daily Briefing. And thanks to our producer, Gilad Brownstein, and to Gili Amar for this out-of-this-world music.
You can find us daily wherever you find your podcasts.
And on our mothership, timesofisrael.com. Like what you hear? Consider rating us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify to spread the word.
And be sure to check out our weekly feature, Times Will Tell, released every Friday. Until next time.
Shalom.